For the next 4 days, they formed a death watch. Clarence, Hester, and John Henry Cole. Jimmy Wildbird's words about the child were still tearing at Cole's consciousness like a jagged glass against silk.
The poison's all through him. It won't be long now.
Can't you do something? He's out of his mind with fever. Couldn't you chloroform him and cut off his arm?
Too late for that.
How long's he got?
Day? Maybe two. Maybe not even that.
That same evening, Cole and Hester sat on the gallery listening to the cicadas.
I'm going to the Chinese section. If the Indian dies before I get back, there's an undertaker in town who'll come and take the body.
Seems a shame a man so young has to die, out of stubbornness and vanity.
A man needs to hold on to something in this world. Pride's as good as anything, I reckon.
Pride is stubbornness. The worst kind, and it's killing him.
What can I say, Hester? Every man has a right to live and die the way he chooses.
Men are such goddamn fools.
Well, you'll get no argument from me.
I can't wait to clear out, go back east.
Heading back to Dark County?
I've come to learn there are a lot of worse places than Dark County.
She had a faraway look in her eyes.
Maybe settle down, marry a local boy, have some kids.
She held the glass like a chalice cup and stared into it.
You think I'm foolish having such thoughts?
No, I don't think you're foolish. Who doesn't want to be happy and at peace?
Yes. But who would want to marry a whore?
Who has to know about your past unless you tell him?
I'd not want to deceive a man who was willing to marry me.
We've all done things we're not proud of, Hester. Doesn't mean we're not good people because we did those things. A man who loves you true enough, it won't matter to him what you'd done before he came along.
She shook her head and smiled.
I'd like to be the woman who has your heart. You're a good man, John Henry.
Not as good as I would like, Hester.
Like you said, we've all done things we weren't proud of. Doesn't make you a bad man. Any more than whoring makes me a bad woman. Ain't that what you just said?
Cole told her what Jimmy had revealed about the child. She listened with her eyes closed and didn't say anything for a time. Then opened her eyes and looked at him.
So you don't know if he's alive or dead?
No.
How sad. For both of you.
Cole rolled each of them a cigarette and they sat there, smoking in silence for a time.
I don't know why I told you.
Because you had to tell someone who wouldn't pass judgment on you. And you knew that I wouldn't.
Maybe that's it.
Confession's good for the soul.
Where'd you hear that?
The preacher who baptized me when I was 15, and who happened to be the person who took my virginity, told me that. Just before he did both of those things.
You confessed to him?
Yes. My adoration for him, my weakness for him, my need for him, and for salvation.
Then maybe confession isn't such a good thing after all.
Depends on who you confess to. He was a fellow more interested in bloomers than Bibles. They ain't all that way, I hope. You're not that way.
You're not planning on dunking me in the river, are you, Hester?
Her laughter was a good thing to hear, and helped ease some of the somber mood of their situations.
I guess we could beat ourselves to death with our misgivings.
Oh, that poor man in there.
I know.
It was morning before Clarence returned. When he saw them sitting on the gallery, Hester's eyes rimmed red, he knew.
He dead?
Earlier this morning.
Well, at least he's out from under his load of suffering. If you want, I'll go and get the undertaker, save you the trouble.
No, I'll do it. I owe him that much.
Cole arranged for Jimmy Wildbird's burial, knowing that when the task was completed, he had to go back and see Anna, and tell her, and ask about the child. He knew it wasn't finished between them, just as the business at hand wasn't finished. But for now, rounding up the renegades would have to wait. It rained later that morning, and they stood there next to the gravesite, just the three of them and the undertaker and the half-breed who dug the grave. Hester dropped in some wildflowers she'd collected just before it rained, and they lay like stick figures with red and blue heads on the wet wood.
God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every purpose.
Clarence pulled a silver flask from his coat pocket while the undertaker spoke some words and took a pull. He handed it to Cole. Cole took a pull and handed it to Hester.
Do you think he would approve of us drinking over his grave?
I don't think he'd be offended.
She took a pull and handed back the flask, and Clarence leaned over the grave and spilled some of his whiskey into it.
Maybe it will keep you warm on your journey.
They walked through the rain back toward the large brick house.
I'm gonna head back to Tahlequah and tell Anna about Jimmy.
Do you mind if I ride that far with you? since I'm going east myself?
I don't mind.
Clarence took a fancy metal box from a shelf and from it took cash money and handed it to Hester.
For a new start in life.
Clarence, thank you, but I couldn't take it.
Well, you ought to, because I've got lots of it coming in every month, and all I'm bound to do is smoke it up at Wang Yu's dope house and give it to Chinese whores. So you might just as well have it as the dope and the whores.
She kissed him on the cheek, and he might have blushed, or it could have simply been the whiskey in his blood that turned his cheeks florid.
Can I offer you a buggy and a horse?
You could, but I can't afford to buy a rig.
I'll take the big blue wagon and team of mules in exchange.
It's a generous offer, but hardly a fair trade for you.
Why, I'd look all the rage driving around town in it.
They shook hands all around and left that very afternoon. After an hour of silence, Hester turned to Cole.
Your eyes are full of trouble.
It's not over.
What's not?
None of it.
You did what you could.
It wasn't enough, Hester. It wasn't nearly enough.
In the east, they saw the dark denim sky split like a torn seam, allowing the thinnest blade of sunlight to penetrate and glow along the road until it looked gold-paved. And there, in a distant field, where half-grown corn stood dark green, the ground was covered with crows. Pablo saw the crows, a dark ring of black against the denim sky, the color of which reminded him of his dead wife's eyes. He took the rifle from its boot and laid it across the pommel of his saddle and urged the horse down the slope toward the cabin. He didn't see any horses in the corral. All he saw were the crows, circling, dropping to earth, rising up again at his approach, their caws fierce against the stillness. The door to the privy stood open, and Pablo could see it had been shot full of holes. He could see, too, that the glass had been shot out of the cabin's windows, and he could see the four depressions in the earth near the cabin that indicated freshly dug graves.
Bad place.
The door to the cabin stood ajar. He dismounted, holding the rifle at the ready, and walked toward the house. In between the privy and the house, he saw 2 feet angling outward in the tall grass, toes pointing toward the sky. The rifle felt hot in his hands. The dead man was bloated, but Pablo recognized him. He looked, then backed away. The man's shirt front was blood-soaked and crawling with maggots. He knew in his heart who had done this thing. He walked about, reading sign around the yard, saw a dropped button from a waistcoat, a silver concho, the same one he'd seen the white renegade wearing sewn to his trousers that fateful day, and that confirmed it had been the renegade's. The tracks led off toward the northwest. He didn't feel up to digging any graves, though he felt mighty terrible about the death of the black man.
Another case of kindness being repaid with unkindness.
He looked up at the sky, the circle of crows, and wondered if maybe God had been asleep.
He has to be sleeping. Only a God who was sleeping would allow such things to happen.
He put the rifle down and found the strength to drag the body into the cabin. Then he found a can of kerosene in a shed near the corral and spilled the contents inside the cabin. He grabbed a bottle of whiskey and struck a match and dropped it to the wetness, and immediately the flames flared and the fire traced through the cabin in a snaky orange line. He went outside again, taking the bottle of whiskey with him, and led the horse over to the water trough, let it drink, and watched as the flames consumed the cabin, knowing he'd done the only thing he could for the man inside. The fire quickly burned through the walls and roof of the cabin.
This is what hell must be like. Hot and full of uncontrollable force. But then if a man is already dead when he went to hell, how would he be made to suffer the lake of fire?
This thought troubled him as he sat and ate what little lunch he had, a few crackers and some of the whiskey, and watched the cabin collapse in on itself.
Hey, so much death. When will it stop, eh, horse?
The horse pawed the ground as Pablo mounted, securing the whiskey bottle. He turned the horse away from the slowly dying fire and headed it in a line with the faded hoof prints of the renegade riders. It took 3 days for John Henry Cole and Hester Price to arrive at Tahlequah. Bone Blue was sitting outside his office with a black and white dog resting at his feet. Cole saw the look in his eyes when they pulled up in the buggy. He looked back up the road leading into town, didn't see Jimmy Wildbird, and Cole opined that he already knew why.
You had trouble?
More than we could handle. This is Hester Price.
He helped her down, and she looked at Bone, at the badge he wore openly on his coat lapel.
You look used up, ma'am. Y'all want to step inside?
They went in. It was a spare room, a gun rack along one wall, a small scarred desk with a ladder-back chair, a spittoon, a checkerboard, and dust along the windowsills. Bone offered Hester the chair.
Where's Jimmy at?
He died of gangrene from a bullet wound to the arm.
Bullet wound to the arm?
He wouldn't let a doctor cut it off.
Damn.
Bone looked off toward the window.
You want to fill me in on the details?
Cole told him the story and watched his face nod into pain.
Those goddamn sons of bitches.
Then he looked at Hester.
Pardon, ma'am.
She waved off the apology.
I'd like a place to get a hot bath and a fresh change of clothes.
Bone nodded.
Down the street is a hotel where you can get a room and a hot bath.
Thanks.
She stood and turned to Cole.
I'll see you later, then?
I've got some business I need to take care of. I'm not sure how long it'll take, but I'll drop by and check on you when I'm finished.
They watched her leave. Then Bone pulled a bottle of Mexican liquor from the bottom drawer of the desk and jerked the cork from it before tipping it back and taking a hard pull. He held it out to Cole, who declined. His gaze was narrow, doubtful.
Jimmy was my best friend, John Henry.
I know.
You didn't kill any of them sons of bitches?
Killed one. The rest got in the wind.
One. One! God damn, one ain't shit!
I've got business to take care of. I'll catch you later.
Bone took another hit of the liquor.
What? You think it's your duty to ride out and tell Anna?
I was there. Jimmy gave me a message for her. I intend to deliver it.
He turned to leave.
Cole!
Don't make this difficult. I'm in a bad mood.
Bone held the liquor bottle in one hand down alongside his leg, held it by the neck in a way that was easy enough to swing if he wanted to. But he didn't want to.
Whatever your thinking went on out there, I told you the truth of it. I didn't let him die.
You and Anna. You
let it be, Bone.
I know it all. Jimmy told me about it.
You're mad and hurt because you lost your best friend. I'll take that into account. But you let off with any talk about Anna and me.
Yeah, well, you go on then, goddammit! Get the hell out of my office!
Anna was standing in light when Cole rode up. The sun fell on her with a grace that made her seem radiant and pure. She stood there as if she'd been waiting for him, and she didn't move until he had dismounted from the buggy and walked up to her.
You've brought me news of Jimmy, haven't you?
Cole nodded.
I had dreams about it after you left. I saw him lying in a coffin, his hair combed all wrong. I saw you too, same way, your hair combed all wrong.
He explained to her what had happened. She flinched in the telling.
That's anybody's guess if he had let the doctor take off his arm, whether he would have made it or not.
Cole could see the conflict roiling in her eyes.
His pride.
She turned and tilted her face toward the sun, her eyes closed.
He didn't want to come home and have you see him without his arm. I can understand that.
She turned suddenly.
He must have hated me terribly.
No, he didn't hate you, Anna. He loved you. That's the message he asked me to deliver. He told me to tell you that he was sorry he couldn't love you enough.
She tried to blink back the tears.
If it was love, then why did it grow so cold in our hearts? And why did he not show me his love and let my own die?
I can't answer that.
No, of course you can't. You weren't here, were you?
To Cole, it sounded like an accusation. But a bitter heart is capable of almost anything. And right that moment, he knew her heart was grievous. A wounded thing, wounded by unspoken words, unrealized dreams. And he was certain much of that bitter, wounded heart had begun its suffering the very night her father came and took their child from her.
You must leave now. You must leave and never come back.
I can't do that, Anna.
You must.
No. There's something I need to ask you about.
Cole could see the pain shadow itself behind the bitterness in her eyes.
Don't ask me.
I have to.
Whatever he told you.
Cole took her by the shoulders, and the feeling of her traveled the length of his arms and crept into his heart like a shadow.
I need to know about our son.
Cole could feel her go weak in his arms, then stiffen as she tried to pull free of him.
Jimmy told you a lie.
He was on his deathbed, Anna.
Please, please don't ask this of me.
I need to know.
I've lost one son already, Anna. Don't make me lose another without knowing.
She pulled free, turned her back to Cole, and folded her arms defiantly across her chest.
Why didn't you tell me?
How was I to tell you anything? You had already fled the nations by the time he was born. If you really loved me, you wouldn't have left. Loving someone doesn't mean leaving them.
You're right, Anna. I made a bad mistake and let your daddy influence me and get me to believe I wasn't worthy of you. I'm a different man now than I was then. I was just a green stick deputy without two nickels to rub together and a hat full of dreams. Your daddy was right not to let me have at you, but I was wrong for listening to him. We all made mistakes, but that doesn't mean we have to keep on making them.
My father was a hateful man, full of pride, just like Jimmy. And it cost him everything, just like Jimmy.
He took the infant.
Her eyes narrowed at the painful remembrance of that night.
I will always hate him for that.
Jimmy told me something else about that night. He told me that your father gave the boy to a woman who once worked for him.
Tears coursed down her cheeks.
Rudina said that he had died, just as my father said.
Maybe she was simply trying to spare you. Your father could be a very intimidating man.
She slumped visibly.
It's hard to believe that she would lie to me.
We'll go and ask her one more time.
No. Let it go. Too many years have passed.
What difference does that make?
She beat her fists into his chest.
I don't think I can stand to know. I don't think I can stand one more moment of heartache.
If you know, you can reach a peace within yourself.
You mean that you can find peace for yourself?
Yes, that too.
She moved away from him again and went into the house, and Cole followed her.
Anna, you could have told me about this the last time we were together.
I would have never told you. Especially not then.
They sat and drank coffee and talked, and the hours slipped by, and the light shifted from one side of the room to the other, then grew dim. They had to light lamps. They talked about Jimmy, and about the child and her father and all the years of hatred she had stored up in her heart.
Do you know what it is like to have the two people you love most missing from your life?
Yes.
Cole told her about his late wife and infant son, who had both died of the milk sickness, and how he had drifted for years with a hole in his heart the size of a fist.
Yes, I know what it's like, Anna. And they weren't the only ones that I missed during that time.
The words bled them of some of the heartache and bitterness and anger that had festered in all those years. But the words did not cleanse them completely, and traces of memory and pain still lingered.
I named him in my heart.
What did you name him?
Thomas. I named him Thomas.
Why Thomas?
She shook her head slightly.
I just thought it was a good name.
It is a good name.
Night fell against the windows.
I want to find out what happened to him, Anna. If you don't want to know, I won't tell you. But I need to know.
She sat for a long time in silence, and he sat there, staring at her across the blackened lamp chimney that held a single yellow flame burning from the wick.
We will go and see Rudina tomorrow.
Good.
Now I must be alone with my thoughts.
I understand. I'll ride back to Tahlequah and come for you in the morning.
He wanted to kiss her, to kiss away the stains on her cheeks where her tears had dried. But he didn't, because he didn't think she wanted him to do it. It was one of those moments where all the intimacy you've shared with someone seems a disadvantage.
Good night, Anna.
He rode back to town in the dark. The night was as black as he'd ever seen it, and his sense of loneliness just as great. Clarence Bellringer was drunk, his mind thick with dope. He'd brought back from Huang Yu's an Oriental girl whose skin was the color of dusk. He'd paid Huang Yu $25 for the privilege of her company and drove her home in his outlandish blue wagon. She was young and pretty and had sadly sweet eyes that caused him to want to weep inside each time he looked at her. Her name was Mei Ling. He thought it meant lotus flower, and he liked the sound of it when she said it. She sat on the big four-poster bed as he began to unloose his gallows. She lay back, as innocent and quiet and gentle as a floating lotus flower. He suddenly felt rueful, his trousers part way down his legs, still holding them by the gallows.
Ah, I shame you. I am a rude Occidental who has no right to inflict myself upon you, to burden you with my sins.
She reached for him. He felt the flames of his desire reignite and scorch his loins.
I'm not worthy of you, my flower.
He fell to his knees and pressed his face to her lap. She stroked his hair gently.
I would give everything to have you truly be mine.
Her scent was strong, womanly, devastating. He rose, finished shedding his trousers, removed his shirt, and stood before her naked, stripped of any pretenses except for those in his rueful heart. She closed her eyes as his hands slid her skirts upward. Then something shattered the moment, the violent opening of the front door below. The girl opened her eyes, startled.
What in hell?
He turned away from her, her skirts still lifted past her knees, his eyes unwilling to abandon her beauty completely.
Damn, it's the big house!
Find the bastards!
Probably upstairs!
He heard commotion in the foyer, the stomping of boots, and reached in a bedside drawer for the small pearl-handled revolver he kept there, the one he often, in his darkest hours, contemplated using on himself. Mei Ling shuddered on the bed, her eyes full of fright and uncertainty, and he quickly pointed toward a wardrobe.
Get into the wardrobe.
She didn't understand. He lifted her from the bed and led her to it and urged her inside.
Stay quiet.
He turned in time to see dark faces at the bedroom door.
Indians? What the hell are Indians doing in my house?
Then a white man appeared amid them and pushed his way through. Clarence fired the pistol, but his aim was untrue and missed its mark and splintered a piece of the wainscoting. And at once, the men in the doorway fired their weapons into him and he fell, sure that he was dying. He clutched the bedding as he slumped to the floor and pulled the coverlet over him, Mei Ling's scent still within its folds.
Why have these men come to kill me?
Then he remembered the big blue wagon he'd traded to the lawman and the woman.
These wild bastards think that I'm John Henry Cole or that poor devil Jimmy Wildbird.
The thought seemed at once laughable and pitiful. Of all the endings he could have conceived, this wasn't one of them.
No!
They dragged the woman from the wardrobe and turned her this way and that and grabbed at her, and the white man leaned down close to Clarence Bellringer.
Chinese bitch, eh? You like him, Yella?
Clarence gargled on his own blood and spit it into the man's face, and the man backhanded him.
Where are the others?
Kato wiped the bloody froth from his face.
Burning in hell, same as you will be.
They shoved Mei Ling to the carpet so that her face was next to his, and one of them took a knife and put it to her throat.
You want to be an ass? You want to act tough and protect your pals? How about we rape this bitch and then cut her throat?
Clarence looked into those sad, sweet eyes of Mei Ling's and saw the empty landscape of his life, a wasteland upon which he had trod and which ended there in the wet, brown innocence of her eyes.
Let her go, and I'll tell you.
Kato smiled.
Sure, amigo.
He removed his knife. Mei Ling lay there like a wounded doe.
You best hurry and tell us. You're running plumb out of blood, partner.
Tahlequah.
Tahlequah? How many?
Just one.
One, eh? What's he look like? How are we gonna know him when we find him?
He's got a limp from being gunshot. Big man. White, like you. Reddish brown beard. Mustache.
Shit.
Kato pulled Mei Ling up by the hair. Clarence knew it was a lost hand when he'd played it. But he'd had to play it anyway, in the barest hope they weren't really interested in her, that they would show a shred of decency toward the girl. That hope was gone. He pulled the pistol from under the coverlet, her scent delirious in his brain, just as one of them ripped her dress down the middle. He shot her through the forehead, knowing he couldn't kill all of them before they finished him, and the girl would suffer their outrage before they took her life. She fell on the carpet next to him, the innocence and light gone out of her eyes like a candle flame extinguished by a gust of wind. The dead eyes stared into his, and he silently professed his love to her.
Damn it!
Then the world faded away. Anna rode a black, and John Henry Cole rode a bay. Bone Blue and Rudina lived a mile outside of Tahlequah in a long, low log house with gardens that were in bloom. Squash blossoms and black-eyed Susans and buttercups tilted toward the sun, their stems bending to the gentle breezes. Cole could smell the river that flowed beyond the gardens and the copse of trees beyond that. Bone Blue was hasping the forehoof of a big gelding. He wore a leather apron, and his face was dark with sweat.
That's Rudina.
Anna nodded toward a woman who bent to the hoe in one of the gardens. Bone Blue dropped the hoof of the gelding and straightened when he saw them riding up. It didn't take a mind reader to know what was going on behind those dark eyes of his as he stood there, waiting. His face was knotted, and his hands hung by his sides. He was a big man who leaned slightly to the right as though he weighed more on that side than he did on the other. They halted their horses.
Bone.
Bone looked at her, then back at Cole.
I'm sorry as hell about Jimmy.
I know. You were his best friend in the world.
Yeah, since he was a kid.
I need to speak with Rudina, Bone.
He turned slightly to look at his wife, who hadn't heard them ride up, or at least had given no indication that she had.
What about?
The child.
The spot just under his left eye twitched. He shook his head slightly.
Why not leave it be, Anna? That's all been such a long time ago.
Don't do this, Bone.
He looked at her finally, taking his gaze from Cole.
Oh, damn it, gal.
Anna slid from her horse and walked out toward the garden while Cole sat his saddle watching. Finally, Rudina turned, holding her hoe by the handle as though she needed it for support, the blade resting among the vegetables that were recently sprung from the earth, turnips and squash and beans.
Ain't bad enough you had to come back without Jimmy. Now look what you've stirred up.
You know about what happened. I'd like to hear about it.
He shook his head.
It happened long before Rudina and me got hitched. I don't know anything about it.
You know something.
I know what you know. Nothing.
And why try and stop Anna from talking to your wife?
Because we don't need no more trouble than what we got already. And we don't need to be dragging up the past.
Cole saw Anna approach her cousin, saw them standing there. Anna saying something to her, the other woman's face dark under the shadows of her hat. But saw, too, the way she turned her head slightly to look in Cole's direction.
I've been thinking.
About what?
About you and me going after them goddamn bastards.
They could be scattered from here to the Canadian border.
You don't want to go after them. Is that it?
Cole looked at Bone for a long, hard moment. Looked to the garden where Anna and her cousin were walking off now toward the trees in the direction of the river that Cole had smelled riding up.
I plan on going after them. I don't need your help.
Cole saw some of the grit go out of Bone's jaw.
Yeah, well, it's time I got off my fat ass and did something. I'm pure worn out from sitting around here seeing my friends brought back in wagons. Or not brought back at all.
Cole dismounted, took Anna's horse and his over to the water tank to let them drink.
You don't think I'm up to the task, do you?
Bone came to stand across from Cole, one boot propped on the edge of the tank. Cole could see their reflections in the water like floating ghosts. Then he looked off toward the west where the sky was building itself into a summer storm.
There's gonna come a rain.
I've been hunting and killing men in these nations long before you white boys came over from Fort Smith.
How old are you, Bone?
I'll be 50, Christmas Day.
You love that woman? The life you've made for yourselves here?
He turned and saw that Anna and Rudina had disappeared down a slope beyond the stand of walnut trees.
Love her? Hell, she's the only woman I ever loved.
Then why bring her grief?
What the hell are you talking about?
They'll kill you, Bone. Hell, they'll probably kill me, too. Difference is, I don't have a woman like that. Someone who wouldn't know what to do if I wasn't here. You really want your wife to be a widow before her time?
He swallowed hard and stared off toward the trees.
We all die sometime.
True enough. But nothing says you have to hurry it along.
I owe my friend.
So do I. So let me take care of it.
Shit.
He took his boot off the tank and removed his hat and looked into it like he'd misplaced something important and it might be in there.
What sort of man would I be if I didn't get vengeance for Jimmy?
A live one.
I ain't afraid to die for what's right.
What's right is you stay here and take care of your wife.
God damn if I don't need a drink. You?
Cole waited until Bone went to a spring house and came back with a crock, dripping water and stoppered with a cork.
Illegal. I buy it off a whiskey drummer who comes through here about every 3 months. I arrested him once and the deputies over in Fort Smith arrested him, three, four times. But he keeps coming back because it's all he knows how to do to make a living. So I buy his whiskey now. Save myself the expense and time of jailing him.
He handed Cole the crock, and Cole took a pull and handed it back.
Tastes like kerosene.
Oh, yeah. It do.
An hour passed before Anna and Rudina came back to the house. Rudina didn't look at Cole, but even so, he could see her eyes were rimmed red, and so were Anna's. Bone took his wife by the arm and led her into the house.
It's as Jimmy said. Thomas was given to my father's housekeeper. He might still be alive.
Her words were like a shiver down Cole's spine.
Where did this woman take him?
She shrugged.
Walk with me for a bit, John Henry.
They walked through a pasture of wildflowers, and a pair of cardinals chased each other through the trees. The first stiff winds from the approaching storm caught Anna's skirts and ruffled them.
The woman took him to Ardmore. Rudina says that he set her up with a house over there, and...
Cole guided Anna to a fallen log, and they sat on it. She looked at Cole, her eyes wet and full of betrayal.
She was more than just his housekeeper.
Cole waited for her to regain her composure and tell the rest of the story.
I remember the woman, and the story Papa told me of why she left, and I never connected the two events of her leaving right after our son was born. He said that she left because her mother was dying and she needed to go and care for her. That's what I remember my father telling my mother and me.
You think your mother knew about it too?
Yes. She must have died with the bitterness still in her.
I'm sorry, Anna.
I want to go and see if we can find him, John Henry.
Then we go to Ardmore. We go as soon as you're ready.
Yes.
Cole started to stand, but she took hold of his sleeve.
I'm afraid, John Henry.
He's your son, Anna. Our son.
What if...
We won't know until we go and find him.
But if he's alive, who knows the stories he's been told about us?
Time he learned the truth. We owe him that much.
She leaned against Cole, her tears soaking the front of his shirt. And she felt frail in his arms, and he wanted to protect her, but wasn't sure he could, even as his own heart seemed to fail him. The thought of seeing a son he had never known he had until a few days ago was daunting.
Let's go to Ardmore.
They walked past the house. Bone appeared in the doorway.
We're going now.
Surely you'll stay to dinner so we can talk about certain matters, you and me?
Nope. We're going now.
Bone's face grew dark and troubled.
You know how I feel.
He looked at the woman by his side.
There's no dishonor in doing your duty, Bone. I think you know what that is.
They started to mount, and Cole was holding Anna's stirrup for her when Bone came out of the house, carrying a nickel-plated Winchester with a tang rear sight and brass studs in the stock.
Here, take this.
What for?
I got it loaded with notch bullets. I cut crosses in the head, so when they hit, they flatten out, do some damage. You take it. Do those boys some harm.
Cole understood his meaning and took the rifle, sliding his own from the boot in exchange. Bone shook hands with Cole.
Oh, she shoots a hare to the left.
They rode off.
Looks like a storm is coming.
Looks like.
The storm felt as though it were inside him already. Pablo had dreams that night. There, under the hard rain that soaked the blankets he had strung between two saplings to make a crude tent, the water dripped through and fell onto his face like cold tears, and he dreamed of his wife, dreamed she had come looking for him through the trees, her dress torn, her lips bloody, a ragged wound above her breasts. In the dream, he tried to rise and go to her, but he couldn't move his arms or legs. They felt like stone, and she stood at the edge of the tree line.
Pablo! Pablo! Pablo, help me!
Her arms were extended, cut marks from a knife slashed into her flesh like small red crucifixes. Then a man in white robes came and sat on a rock near his feet.
Are you ready to go with me, Pablo?
Maria!
He awakened with a start, the water running off his face as his heart staggered inside his chest. His clothing was soaked. He felt the death coming within him. He reached for the whiskey bottle, saw that it was empty.
Damn it!
He stood and took the blankets and saddled the horse and rode into Tulsa. He arrived the next morning about dawn. That's where he saw the man in the box. There in the window of a funeral parlor, a dead man was propped up in an open coffin. Pablo stopped his horse and looked for a time through the plate glass at the man whose eyes were half closed and whose hair was parted and combed into wet strands. The man was dressed in a green checked suit, and his hands were crossed and tied at the wrists with a bit of twine. There was black bunting around the window, and the dawn sun struck the glass and reflected Pablo's own image superimposed over that of the dead man. Pablo wondered if it might be an omen. He rode on, found a small cafe, and dismounted. Three or four people were eating their breakfasts, and they looked up when he entered, then went back to eating. He sat down at an empty table, and soon a man came over.
What do you have?
Coffee and something to eat.
Pablo knew he had no money to pay for it, and he laid his rifle across the table.
Sure, sure. How about some steak and eggs? I'll get that coffee.
The man turned and went into the kitchen. Pablo looked around and settled back in his chair. The waiter returned in a moment with his coffee and set it before him.
Your breakfast will be out in a few minutes.
I saw a dead man in a box.
Yes, that was Clarence Bellringer. He used to be a doctor of sorts. Until the other day, some men shot and killed him, and a young Chinese whore.
Why did these men shoot him?
Who knows? They just rode in and found him in his house and shot him to pieces.
And the woman?
The man shook his head.
Oh, you don't want to know what they did to her.
Pablo knew for certain then that they were the men he was looking for.
Do you know which way these men went when they left here?
No, sir. I was fishing the day it happened. But Fat Flora says she saw him.
Who is Fat Flora?
The baker's wife. Sees everything. All she does is sit and eat and watch what goes on around here. Man can't take a leak out behind the barn and she don't see it.
Where does this woman live?
Up the street, around the corner to your right. It's a bakery. You can smell the block before you get there.
Thank you.
Pablo rose to leave.
Ain't you gonna stay and drink your coffee or eat your breakfast?
No, I have no money to pay for it.
The man looked at the coffee, then looked at Pablo, at the poor way he was dressed.
Hell, this here part of the country is getting overrun with bums.
I am not a bum, senor.
Yeah? You know how to wash dishes?
Pablo could smell the food frying in the kitchen, and his stomach turned over.
How many dishes?
A sink full. My dishwasher fell off a roof and broke his leg.
Oh.
Well, you want to eat or not?
Pablo sat back down, took off his hat, and placed it on the seat next to him, then took a sip of the coffee.
Bueno.
Good. It's a deal. I'll bring out your plate.
After Pablo ate and washed the sink full of dishes, he walked down the street to the baker's house feeling much better. The sun was rising from behind a low bank of silvery clouds, and its rays felt warm on his skin. Maybe he would live long enough to find the men and finish his business with them after all. The baker's wife sat eating a pastry out front of the store. She was fat, just as the man had said. Pablo could see the baker through the window. He was bent to an open oven, taking out a tray of breads.
I am told that you saw the men who shot Senor Bellringer.
The woman looked up at him with sugar on her lips.
You bet I did. Four of them. Meanest looking dogs I ever laid eyes on in this town. Injuns look like, except one. Could have been a white man. Hard to tell. They was all so filthy, dirty.
Did you see which way they went when they left here?
Sure. They took the road towards Tahlequah.
When exactly did all this happen?
2 days ago, before it rained. Lord, you should have seen what they did to that poor China girl he had in the house with him.
Pablo tried not to think about it. He was already on the trail of the men in his thoughts. This time they would not escape. And his blood was the hunter's blood once more. John Henry Cole and Anna Wildbird stopped often to rest the horses and rest themselves. They stopped the first night at a small town they didn't know the name of, but the lights of which they had seen a mile out. Cole located a boarding house run by a woman, paid her $3, and took the key. When they entered their room, Cole lit the lamp next to the bed. It was a small bed.
I can make a pallet on the floor.
Anna turned her back to him and began to unbutton her shirt.
No, I won't have you sleeping on the floor like an old hound.
I just thought...
Please, don't say anything, John Henry.
Cole removed his hat, sat on a chair, and took off his boots and socks, and watched her finish undressing. She stood for a moment, silent, wearing only her underwear and bloomers and a chemise. Then she turned slowly and saw that Cole was looking at her.
This reminds me of our first time in that hotel. Do you remember?
How could I forget?
She crossed the room, took his face in her hands and looked down at him. Her countenance was soft, the eyes sadly sweet as they always were, as they had been that first night all those years ago. Her black hair framed her high cheekbones, and he kissed her hands. And she closed her eyes, and he could feel her shudder as he stood up and took her in his arms.
We don't have to.
She kissed him on the lips. The kiss was as light and delicate as snow falling.
I need you to hold me, John Henry. I just need to be held.
He finished undressing and slipped into the small bed next to her, and she curled into him, and he held her and held her until he could feel the even breathing of her sleep, and he held her still. Throughout the night, he dozed and awakened to make sure she was still there. A few days later, they arrived in Ardmore just as the sun was beginning to settle into a flaming orange ball beyond a distant line of trees.
This woman, do you know where we'll find her?
Her name is Naomi Littlehorse, and Rudina said that she heard she was working as a fortune teller.
Then she shouldn't be hard to locate.
If she's still here in Ardmore.
They saw a group of children playing baseball in a vacant lot.
Excuse me, son?
The red-headed boy he called to turned around.
Yeah?
Where can we find the local sheriff?
Cemetery, mister. Old Bob passed on yesterday.
Well then, do you know where we can find Naomi Littlehorse? Heard she might work as a fortune teller around here. You ever hear of her?
You mean that old Indian witch?
Then you know where I can find her?
Lives out on the west edge of town in a yeller house with blue shutters. Keeps a goat in the yard. I hear tell she bleeds it to make potions with.
Cole handed the kid a nickel.
Thanks, mister.
He and Anna rode out to the yellow house with blue shutters, and Anna sat there for a moment before dismounting.
You prepared for the worst?
She nodded, and they dismounted, climbed the steps to the gallery, and knocked on the door. They waited.
Who's knocking?
Naomi, it's Anna Wildbird. Anna Rain.
They waited in silence for several moments.
Go away, leave me alone.
Cole knocked again.
We aren't leaving. You might as well just let us in.
He could hear a chair scraping a hardwood floor, and then the door opened. Cole could see right off why Anna's father had found favor in the woman, for even in spite of her age now, she had light gray eyes that seemed to absorb you when they looked at you, and fine high cheekbones, and all of her beauty hadn't completely faded.
Why have you come, Anna?
You know why, Naomi.
The woman turned and walked into the house, leaving the door ajar. They followed her in, and she took a seat at a table in a room that was alight with dozens of candles. Anna sat across from her, and Cole stood by her side.
You have come for nothing.
We've come to find the child you took from me.
The woman looked at Cole.
He was the one? The one got you in that condition? The boy's eyes are the same as his.
Yes, he's the boy's father.
It sounded strange to Cole to hear Anna say that, but it was a truth he'd come to accept.
Then blood runs to blood and water to water.
What do you mean?
The boy is like you.
You don't know anything about me.
You are a death rider, just like the boy.
Tell us where he is. What has happened to him?
The woman switched her gaze from Cole to Anna.
I did the best for him I could. You can't blame me for what happened.
Cole felt Anna shudder under the hand that he rested on her shoulder.
What are you saying, woman?
I raised him and loved him and fed him lies. It was the lies that eventually turned him bad. The lies caused him to leave me and go off wild as the wind. A lie starts out small, gets big, gets in the blood, fouls the water, fouls a boy's heart and turns it to poison.
Tell me.
He's gone off with men like him. Men who know the taste of blood.
Get to it, woman. Talk straight.
I called him Thomas. But the others named him Red Snake.
It felt like a bullet had struck Cole's heart. Silently, he cursed the fate that had sent him on a mission to capture and kill his own son.
Do you know a man named Cato Pierce?
She nodded.
He's the one that fed Thomas more lies, turned his head crazy. Told him he either had to be an Indian or a white man. Asked him what did white men ever do for him.
Anna looked up at Cole, her eyes filled with uncertainty, fear.
Goddamn.
Anna shook her head.
No, it can't be. He's with the men we were after.
No.
Sins of the father will fall on the heads of their sons.
Shut up!
Anna lurched for the woman, but Cole restrained her. She fought him, then relented, her cheeks stained with her tears of pain.
Now you know. Now you can go back to wherever you came from. The truth stuck in your heart like a knife.
Leave off.
Anna, her body shaking, let Cole put his arm around her and take her outside.
Pain begets pain. Your father thought me good enough to care for your bastard, but not good enough to marry. It is why I placed a curse on him.
They left the porch and moved to the horses. Cole lifted Anna onto the back of her horse. Once mounted, he turned the horses back to Ardmore. His last glimpse of the woman was of her standing in the doorway. A crow landed on the roof and paced and cawed as though it was warning them of the danger that lay ahead, of the broken trail of dreams they'd traveled, only to find heartbreak.
I'll find him.
No, I will.